me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own.
Fulfilling my own destiny. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great, big, vast world of ours. You are listening to Purpose Talk Radio, and I am Cindy Freeman, your host. We air on this show every Monday at 2 p.m. Central Time, better known in the Pacific Time as noon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and for a couple more weeks over in the U.K., 9 p.m., when daylight saving time comes over there, it'll be 8 p.m. I thank you for being part of listening to this show. Today is November 10th, Monday. And in the United States this week, we are celebrating all of our veterans. So we will be speaking to a veteran on our show today and how he has been able to transform his skills from the military into other aspects of his career. And our guest name is Tom Sherbrooke, and I'll introduce him in just a few moments. I'd like to know that the theme show for this song is called I Am Who I Am. And you heard a little bit of that just a few minutes ago, and you'll hear some at the end again. It is by the group True Trinity. The vocalist on that was Jillian Clark, one of our co-writers. The other is Rachel Martinez and myself. And you can find that song at the website True Trinity, TrueTrinity.com. As a part of Purpose Talk Radio, if you'd like for more information about the show and how you can be a guest or can suggest a guest, you can get a hold of me directly on the website, PurposeTalkRadio.com, PurposeTalkRadio.com. And if you want to send me an email message, it's Cindy@PurposeTalkRadio.com. The guests on this show each week are people who are living their purpose and who want to share with you how they came to know what that was, how they came to achieve their purpose, and things that you might want to maybe try or incorporate into your life to be able to live your purpose. It is for anyone, actually, because hopefully, no matter what you're doing, whether it be someone who cuts lawns to the CEO of a major Fortune company, hopefully you are in a position to be able to live your purpose. So, having said that, I will bring our guest on quickly here. And hey, hello to you.
Yes, and hello to you.
Are you there?
I am here.
Hello. Great, great. Folks, this is Tom Sherbrooke. And he also lives in this lovely Milwaukee area where I am. And I'll give you a little more detail in a little bit. So, you know, he lives, unlike me, in this city. He lives out in the country, so he's probably enjoying some of this, the trees and the weather out there, right?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, we were out raking leaves this morning.
Oh, beautiful.
As a part of trying to keep up with the estate, so.
Right. I love rustling through the leaves when I get the chance. It's like, I don't know, I'm not necessarily liking fall because of what comes after it, although I do like fall in general. But, you know, kicking through, rustling the leaves, raking them, it's just so much fun.
Yes. And peaceful.
True. So, Well, folks, I would like to officially introduce you to Reverend Thomas Sherbrooke. I'm not going to give all the years that he gives in his bio. Just we'll leave that to whatever he'd like to say later on that. But we'll just get a little bit of clue on some of it. But Tom was born in Milwaukee into a traditional Catholic family. He was, of course, going through school and all the traditional things that folks do out here, and was accepted as a candidate for the Catholic priesthood. So he began his studies at the seminary in Donaldson, Indiana. After graduating in 1949, he began his formal theological studies. He took the vows in the Order of Priests of the Sacred Heart in September of that, the following year. Also in that same year, he continued his education at Sacred Heart Monastery in Hales Corners, Wisconsin. After much prayer and deliberation, though, a few years later, he decided to take another path in his life, so did not take those final vows at that point. In fall of that year, Tom enrolled in Marquette University, where he studied economics, and then the following year, enrolled in the Milwaukee School of Engineering. There he completed 2 years of mechanical engineering. At that point, of course, the Korean War draft interrupted his studies. He then enlisted in the U.S. Army, joining the Counterintelligence Corps as an agent. After a year studying investigations and intelligence gathering, he served 2 years in Korea in an intelligence role. The final year of his 3-year enlistment was working for the Department of Army in the Northern California area as an Army investigator. After a honorable discharge, he remained in California, where he worked for several years in major U.S. corporations as a sales engineer. In 1968, he purchased a San Francisco business, which was sold approximately 10 years later when he returned to Wisconsin to assist his aging parents. Now, as many of us know, sometimes our original plans and our original thoughts come back to follow us. And in 1979, that was the case. Thomas had always nurtured an active religious and spiritual life. He felt a strong urge to return to the original calling of being a minister. However, of course, that was not at that point in the Catholic Church because of theological differences. And he, in the meantime, had explored various other denominations and was ultimately ordained an interdenominational minister. In 1980, with a few small supporters, he founded a 501c3 religious and spiritual organization in this Milwaukee area called St. Anne's Interdenominational Church. By 2000, about 20 years later, St. Anne's Church, under Reverend Sherbrooke's leadership, had grown to hundreds of members, 5 clergy, 40 employees, 7 buildings, including 2 church locations, a bookstore, healing center, coffee house, senior center, restaurant, and many, many, many ministries. I know one of the big ones was a wedding ministry as well, as helping folks that were disadvantaged in the city. In 2007, after 28 years of serving the hurting, demoralized, disenfranchised people, Pastor Tom retired at the age of 76. Ha ha. Little did he know, though. Upon retiring, Pastor Tom, together with his wife, Rosemary, formed a Course in Miracles study group, which he continues to hold at his house. And then also he has done and continues to do extensive counseling. In September of 2011, he was asked to serve as a temporary minister and pastor at Unity Church in Milwaukee and continues there as a minister emeritus right now. And that is how the two of us met, as I do attend Unity Church in Milwaukee as a member currently. So, again, officially welcome to the show and Purpose Talk Radio and talking a little bit about your purpose.
Oh, well, that's a lot to talk about. So.
Well, we won't go into, you know, all of those aspects of it. But you know, through the years, obviously you've had some various changes of life goals and career paths and things like that. And like I said, one of the big ones I would like to focus on is the veteran. And some of that I know was kind of by force because it was Korean War time, it was draft time, and all of that. Although, you know, you did get to choose where you wanted to go as far as a branch was concerned, things like that. So I guess what I'd like to say for, you know, what I presume there were some turning points, some very significant points in your life where you made some decisions to take on these various careers. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those turning points might have been?
Yes, well, let's go back to the Army experience and a good place to start. Primarily because while the draft was going on, I was also made aware that if you sign up for 3 years instead of two, if you enlist, you can have your choice of where you want to go. And I was offered the possibility of becoming a member of the Counterintelligence Corps, and after learning of the duties and activities, I really, instead of being drafted for 2 years, enlisted for 3 years. So that was a very big turning point, because I have no idea where I would have ended up if drafted. So, and you might say, why was I selected out? And it was basically because of my monastic training. They had a fairly clear idea that that I had probably above normal honesty, integrity, and loyalty, and so that is why I was chosen to serve in that elite corps. And so I began, and because I had been in a monastery, monastic setting for about 8 years, I really already was like in the Army, because it's discipline, discipline, discipline. And so I was prepared for the military training and did well. And because I was used to not talking back and keep being obedient and doing what I was told, I was, you know, did well. And it didn't take long until I was promoted to a sergeant. So that was a very good experience.
Okay.
And then I just want to just say that at the time the Korean War was taking place, but the fighting was over. So when I was transferred to Korea, it was in a peaceful setting. It was not war, or that the shooting had already stopped, and there was the some sort of agreement between North Korea and South Korea. So. It really wasn't. But however, that was a war-torn country, and I had an opportunity not only to serve in the government, but I used my free time to help out in orphanages and other, you know, and other needy areas to serve their community as well. So that was a wonderful experience there. Very. Peaceful, loving, gentle people. I love the Koreans. So, and after a couple of years, and
so
by the way,
that puts you in a position to be able to help other people while you were over there, as opposed to just fighting a war, like you said, because it was over.
Yes,
right?
Yes, exactly true. And I also asked people back home to send clothing and food, and so they shipped it over, and then we were able to share that with. The poor and the needy, and particularly the orphanages, which were run, by the way, by Christian nuns. So, and that, you know, that was a real learning experience, and I'm grateful that I had that opportunity. So, so my military experience was, I look back, and it was one of the most significant things in my life, not only because I traveled, I saw the world, I was able to visit Hawaii and also Japan. And every so often we had R&R, and in that time you had R&R in Japan. So that was and I was able to travel and meet those people and spend time with them. And by the way, the Army trained me in Japanese, so I was able to be rudimentary, conversive with the Japanese, and they liked that. So, and then after my 24 months in the Orient, then I was transferred to San Francisco, where I finished up my last year of service. And now that was significant because when I ended up in California in 1958, things were very, very active and growing and exciting, and everything was happening in California. So I really stayed on. So as a direct benefit of my service, I visited a place that I probably never would have gone to. I grew up in low class, if you will, poor people. And so we didn't have a travel experience, but the Army just really gave me that wonderful exposure to other cultures and other people, and also the flexibility of living and dealing with people, because you are always meeting new people, both in the service and out of the service. So it really prepares you for life. Frankly, I think every teenager, upon graduating from high school, should spend 2 years in the military. It would be very light, very expanding, and it really would help them to gain the discipline and the hard work that you need to be successful in life. And that training, it probably is why, if I'm successful today, it is because of the hard work and the training I received, the discipline. That you don't think so much about your physical body, but about the mission that you want to accomplish. So I'm very grateful for that. And as a matter of fact, it served me so well that actually my last physical exam that I've had in my life was when I mustered out of the Army in 1958. So they must have strengthened me quite a bit.
Right. Well, we hear a lot about military being, all this regiment, and you got to listen to somebody else, and you don't have any free time on your own, and there's a lot of stories about that, and then you hear other ones that go, oh man, come on, I didn't have to listen to anybody, but we know that's not true. Those are probably the guys that ended up doing kitchen duty too many times because they thought they didn't have to. But, you talk about the regiment and what obviously it's changed over the years, I'm sure. But, what was a typical day for you at that point?
Well, let's break that down into the initial training. And the biggest lesson you have to learn in the military is button your lip. You don't talk back. Now, I think probably the way children are raised today, that's very difficult for them to do. And, I just took it for granted. That's you got the rules and you keep the rules. And you do it because you want to do it, not because you have to do it. And so I kind of breezed through my initial training without any difficulty. I think I only had KP once. But by and large, it was a very positive experience, and I admired the sergeants who were drill sergeants training, and it's quite amazing. And the other thing is, I had left my family when I was 14 to go for monastic training, and so I was used to being on my own. And I know being away from family is probably the most difficult thing young people who go into the military,
right,
have to do. So it's about discipline, it's about hard work, it's about yes sir and no sir, and doing what you're told. And that's the wonderful part of the training, because if you learn that, not only will you advance in the Army, but you will advance all your way through life.
Okay.
I was grateful. Now, that's the military. Now, the other aspect is once I was trained and went, I had a year of schooling. I learned writing, because you to be an investigator, you have to write reports, so you learn a lot of writing. And as I mentioned, I was taught Japanese to prepare me for the Orient. And so it added greatly to my scholastic. And that was military intelligence school, and it was in Baltimore, Maryland. And that was close to New York City. So on weekends, we could go to New York and have a little free time. So that was a little extra benefit of the training. So, and then being overseas, I had many privileges. For example, I had a car and I had a driver who was a Korean, so I had transportation.
Cool.
And so I could get around quite freely and move around in the society at large.
Was that because you were in counterintelligence, or because of the rank you had achieved, or what got you that privilege?
Well, surprisingly, when you're in military intelligence, your rank is secret. So they don't know whether you're a sergeant, a private, or a lieutenant, captain, or whatever. So So therefore, you have all the privileges of officers and privileges of the regular Army, and so that is kind of sets you apart and gives you a great deal of freedom. And you do not live in barracks; you live in private quarters, and that was also a privilege. And I think I can say that, just for example, what did I do well? For one thing, I was to get acquainted with all the prostitutes that were working in the Incheon, Korea area, in order to see if any of them could have been North Korean spies, because the GIs frequented these girls and were probably, they thought that maybe some of these girls could be getting information. So my job was to mingle with them, to get to know them, and to find out what their backgrounds were. So that was very interesting.
Yeah, that would be really kind of counter to the training for priesthood there, wouldn't it?
I suppose that's why they did that. After all, we had the vow of obedience, poverty, and chastity in the monastery. So you had to keep your
behave yourself.
Yes, behave yourself. Okay. That's right. So that was my military experience. I don't think most people have it that way, but it was directly related to, I think I was chosen because of my background within the religious life. So that was a double blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so.
I want to invite folks, if they want to participate in this conversation, there's a couple ways that you can do that. The first would be on the bottom of the Blog Talk Radio page where this show is airing. If you go to the bottom, there is a chat room there. You're welcome to put questions or comments in that. However, once the show ends, that will disappear. So instead, I would prefer, and you'd be better off, putting that into Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook. We have a thread pinned to the top of that page where you can also comment or type in anything that resonates you. If you're listening to the show in the archives, you're welcome to post in there as well, because that stays up in infinity, but it stays pinned to the top of the page until the next show is announced. And the other way is to call in either on Skype or on phone at 347-205-9074. Again, the phone 347-205-9074. 205-9074. If you call in by Skype or phone, please press the number 1 on your keypad so I know you are calling to speak to us rather than just listening. Otherwise, you can just listen to the show that same way. All right. So you get through the military. We also hear a bit about the talk of counterintelligence and, oh, it's spying and it's undercover work and it's, you know, I guess I want to say some of what we hear is almost kind of a shadiness to it. But there's more to it than that. I'm sure it's to help our government. It's to help the government where you're serving, all of that. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about what, I know I obviously don't want you to give away any secrets or anything, but what does that really mean to work in counterintelligence?
Well, it's counterintelligence is basically information gathering. And so where I was living, there was maybe a dozen agents, and they all were assigned different cases. But one of the things we did is we made contact with the local government, for example, to see if there's anything we could do to facilitate things that were needed, because after all, the war had ended, but the country was there was no industry, there was no manufacturing, most people were unemployed, and just getting by, basically. So if we could assist the government in any way with medical supplies or help or information or transportation, certainly the U.S. Army was willing to do that. So that was one thing. And then we also mixed with the local police force, because after all, GIs, there was a lot of them in Korea. They had money, and occasionally they could get into trouble by being rowdy or out of control, because there were bars, as I pointed out, and there were certainly the areas of the city that were peopled by women. And by the way, these women were not the kind of people that we normally would say as prostitutes. They were maybe the only member in the family that was able to support brothers and sisters, parents, grandparents, and relatives, because that money that they received from the GIs was worth a whole lot more than the Korean won, and it was valuable. So $5 was a whole lot of money in those days. Then the other thing we did is work with industry and as much as we could to make sure that we could help them in any way. So there was a lot of other things going on besides, you know, there wasn't spying in the typical sense. The other thing we did is security. We would visit the camps to make sure that the guards were well trained, that the offices were locked when they were supposed to be locked, and there was order, and people were attentive to security details up and down the line. So that's what we did. I don't even know if they have that anymore. I imagine they do, but it's probably not the way it was when I was in the service. So, can we talk a little bit about the current veteran?
I hope that was my next question. And I also invite anyone who might be a veteran, of course, to please call in. So, So, what is different now as far as the military? As far as what you know, I'm sure you keep in touch with some people, that kind of thing. So, sure, what would you like to share about that?
Well, today. Most people are, because of lifestyle, are really not equipped for the hardships of the military life. And because of that, they often when they return, especially if they are in places of active war, that there's so much scarring going on in their emotional and even in their physical lives. And so when they come back, when I came back, I was able to move into industry, get a good job, and go forward. But in the present day, because of the experience, the violence that they experience, and also their emotional and spiritual unpreparedness for all this, they come back scarred. And so I'm hoping that listeners will be sensitive to the veterans today and pray for them if you're of that persuasion, and also to assist them in any way, if they're members of the family, to help them out, to visit with them, or to show concern, because my wife has a cousin who was in Vietnam, and even to this day he experiences the after effects of Agent Orange, and it has affected his whole life. So that was a little bit different from my experience. So I hope listeners are and contribute in any way they can, either through money donations. I just got a letter from the USO. And they are looking for donations in order to support troops in any way they can. So that's my comment about today's people, and I would hope, and I have a sensitive spot in my heart, because I know that that they really need a lot of emotional support and help.
Now, is some of that because they have to go through training in shorter periods of time, or just is it in how they are prepared, or is there
That's a good question, and I think it's lifestyle. Today, they grow up, they're used to doing things. They have an independence today. Not long ago, I was in a restaurant, and the mother looked at her 5-year-old child and says, "What do you want to eat?" I was shocked, really, but it tells me how kids grow up today with freedom to make their own choices. And in the military, they don't give you that chance. You are do as you're told, and that's very difficult for them. So in many ways, they are not prepared for the ruggedness of the training, and for especially if they are in combat situations, how the pressures that they experience. And so therefore they come back, they're really wounded, if not physically, at least mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and which that healing is going on, and maybe it'll never be healed because there's not a lot of resources. By the way, I heard a recent statistic that 22 veterans a day are committing suicide on an average.
Ooh.
And that is, I don't even think the average person knows that. But they're not getting the help, and I'm sure we're all aware of the shakeup in the Veterans Administration, which was a topic of CBS Sunday, that they're trying to get on board to help the veterans in a timely manner. So they got real challenges today. But I think it's difference of lifestyle. We grew up, we did what we were told. We were not used to having a lot of comfort, and it's just the way it was. I grew up during the Depression, so I mean, just to have a little food you're thankful. So.
Even there is a difference in the generation between the two of us, and you're right, even then it was like in the morning I was expected to be at the breakfast table with my father at 6:15,
We didn't leave for school until 7:15 or 7:30, depending on which year in school we were. Too bad. You know, it was family breakfast. You know, mm-hmm. that's what Mom had on the table, and we ate. Sometimes there was, okay, do you want, you know, a pancake with jelly on it, or do you want applesauce or something like that, Dad, you know? But it was, here's your breakfast, you know? You don't eat it. Guess what? Too bad. You're eating it anyway. And we were at home for supper, and, you know, we could do after-school activities, but we were expected to be home by supper time and be there as the family. You know, no, it didn't make too much difference, you know. Occasionally, sure, we'd go by a friend's house, or there was, you know, staying after school and hanging out later for the football game or whatever. But like you said, there was a tradition and a expectation of what we were going to do in any given day or any given week. And
yes.
I look at my nephews now, you know, 16, 19, and we got a five-year-old. And like you said, it's, okay, what do you want, you know? And I go, wow, you know, I don't want to eat that banana. I'm going, excuse me? Oh, my gosh. Well, whatever. You know, he's not really that. Yeah. He's a pretty good kid, but you do get that. And it's, yeah. And then, like you said, you do still hear the military. And I don't think any of that has really changed much in, you know, the officers are in charge. They are responsible for your life. So, therefore, mm-hmm. you've got to pay attention.
Yes. And the other thing is, I think they're realizing, and maybe they're not yet, I heard on this program last night that they need 24,000 people to attend to emotional health, so that even if they come back physically from Iraq or Afghanistan, often they have mental problems because they may follow orders, but they may resist it internally. You know, they do not know what it means to serve, and so there's a lot of emotional trauma in their lives, which is not being addressed, and so I think the country owes them that, and I hope indeed that they wake up to that, so that they can, you know, be healed and get on with their lives.
So you've kind of briefly touched on it. What can we, as the general public, do to help the military? I know with at our church this week we are going to have a light dinner and a gratitude service for our military. And it's amazing, you know, it started out with just our members of our church and has expanded, I understand, to over 100 people that will be coming that we want to acknowledge. And, you know, it's nothing real big, but it is a thank you for serving our country and being, risking your life, maybe mm-hmm. even more so than some of our firefighters and our police officers and those that we generally consider being in a pretty risky job. So I'm kind of amazed at how it has grown just with our little church. So what mm-hmm. can we as a general public do, you know, to maybe help? Is it listen to folks? Is it, you know, is it offer money? What can you suggest on that?
Well, I think that one of the things is to be sensitive to them, because I don't think the average person can even begin to imagine the emotional trauma that many of them suffer. And because they don't understand it, they can't speak about it or even suggest how it could be. You know, our society is not really well equipped to handle the problem that is following the wars that we get into. Because how can I say this? They address the physical needs that they understand. So if they need an arm replaced or a leg replaced or other physical needs, but they do not grasp the spiritual, psychological needs. And that's because people are not educated and are not aware. They don't even know that you have to address these other things. And not even in our normal society is this addressed. Some psychologists or psychiatrists say that 50% of all physical ailment is psychological, and yet this goes totally untreated and unrecognized. So it's where we are as a society. It seems to me that we're many, many light years behind. And that's spoken to you as a minister, not a military person, because that's why eventually I left, you know, the business world to return to the spiritual world, because I realized people's needs were much more than the society at large was addressing. And I can give you a personal example. As I mentioned, that my last physical exam was in 1958, but I've never been sick, and I have, and I've never taken a medicine, a pill or a drug, and I do believe that is because along the way I realized how important it was to have an active spiritual life, and this is not necessarily religion. This is a kind of a personal journey to realize that the most important thing in a person's life is, if you say, I guess I can say, the relationship with God or the divine or source energy or with Allah, whatever word you want to use, but that perhaps is the most important, which is why I later gave up a very lucrative business job to become a minister and eventually build a church that could be a healing sanctuary where people could come to be healed. And I'm sure that need is out there still today. So, as you know, that's what Unity...
Right. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, that, you know, which is why I came out of retirement to assist at Unity, so that was and is a wonderful source for spiritual healing. And maybe some of the, if we're fortunate enough to attract some of the veterans from the current military adventures, they might find a lot of healing there. So.
Right. Yeah, and one of the things, and I've talked on the show several times, you know, if you don't like one of the choices of words, put in the one that follows and works for you. There's no, you know, spiritual doctrine on this show. It's very open in that, you know, we do have our guests. You know, they have their own doctrine, and I encourage everyone to be able to share their history and who they are in their own spiritual development. So. I want to reiterate that again today as well. And most people know, like I said, because I've said enough times that I am part of Unity myself right now, also growing up in Catholicism, so have had the gamut. So I understand what you're saying a little bit on this, you know, being able to accept people where they are, both spiritually, mentally, physically, because there really isn't. Here's the other piece. I know with the military, there's really not a lot of opportunity for spiritual development while you're sitting in the trenches. Oh, my God, help, keep them away from me. You know,
yes, exactly true.
Spiritual development. Yeah. There's no support. So.
Well, they say war is hell, and there's no doubt about it. It's true. And, you know, the country is preparing again for another possible engagement, and so I hope all of those who are listening do pray for peace, and you pray for peace, but you also try and bring peace into your life individually, in all relationships, and learn to harmonize and to work together and to rather than to be angry or upset or hateful or revengeful or even judgmental. We have to bring a greater peace into the world, which is part of the mission, because when you see how much money countries put into the military and they get very little return, I don't mean in the troops, but in the cost and the hardship and the pain, and there's very little return. So if we could somehow avoid all that, this would be a blessing to the country and to all citizens. So I do hope people become aware that even the violence in their own life is part of the violence in the world. And it's not only in Afghanistan and, in Iraq, but it's in our own lives and in families. So, which is why I'm back in the ministry, to help people understand that and to heal and to find that inner peace, which is the peace that really heals, that inner peace, when you can have that.
So you mentioned how the training as a priest helped you in the military to understand, following
the
directions,
discipline.
Shutting the mouth, the discipline, all that. So let's now you move forward into, you mentioned again, and we've mentioned that you, a non-denominational minister working with Unity in the corporate world. You also had that aspect, which we didn't touch on too much, but how did the military then turn around specifically and train you for your corporate world and your eventual ministry?
Well, you bring up a good point. The first job I had coming out of the military was for a company, and this was in California, Sacramento, California, Dun & Bradstreet. Now, Dun & Bradstreet is a Wall Street firm that did credit reporting. And so they had they weren't agents, of course, but they had their people go out and investigate the credit rating of almost every company that exists. Every business has a credit rating. And so that's one of the things, that's the first job I had. And it was a very, very good job, because I have never forgotten how important it is to have a good credit rating. And I did that for a couple of years until I moved on. So I got a better job as in the engineering of a large company. So, but that was my first job, and they hired me real fast. So
I bet.
So that's how it did help, that the investigations.
Okay. Okay. And then I'm sure, again, the compassion for other people and, again, the listening skills that were required in the military, I'm sure, are helping you now with your counseling and your other ministry work.
Yes. That's right. That investigation, so you ask pertinent questions, and then you have to really be willing to listen to answers. Listening is a skill sometimes that it's difficult to acquire, because it's easier to be talking than to be listening for most people. So that was another skill. Yeah, the listening skill. You know. Oh.
Okay. Cool. Well, as I think we're asking probably the last questions in here, I want to invite people one more time. If you have a question or comment you'd like to make, please give us a call at 347-205-9074. Again, 347-205-9074. So I guess I'd like to give you the opportunity for anything I might have missed asking you, or anything specifically that you wanted to share today.
Sure. I would like to offer the invitation, if there is anybody in the Milwaukee area who is tuned in and listening, that And if they have no church of their own, they should consider a visit to Unity Church in Milwaukee in the Wauwatosa area. And our website is Unity Church in Milwaukee at wi.rr.com. And you might find it very interesting and a very wonderful place to call spiritual home. So that's my little pitch for our ministry.
Okay, cool. Yes, and that would be the email address, and the actual website would be unitychurchinmilwaukee.org if you'd like to check out some of the events that are up and coming. I know there's a lot of them that are planned in the future here. So, like you said, everyone's welcome to be a part of that. Is there a way that you'd like to have people get a hold of you, Pastor Tom, if they have any further questions?
Well, I do have an email which I'm happy to furnish, and it's my last name, which is Sherbrooke, spelled S-H-E-R, and then Brooke, B-R-O-O-K, Sherbrooke, and the numeral 1, Sherbrooke1, at yahoo.com. And I would be very happy to address questions or any concerns of your listeners.
And then, again, also, please do check out the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page on Facebook. I've put a couple of statements in there from today's interview on there. Anyone's welcome to add anything, or if I missed anything, Pastor Tom, please feel free to type in there on that top thread if you'd like in the comments section that you'd like to put in there. And one of the last things I like to do with our listeners is to, in addition to summarizing things, but is to leave them with an affirmation, an I am, that has pertains to the show and the information that you've passed on today. Is there one that you'd like to share with us, or would you like me just to put one out there?
Well, bottom line, here's what I've learned both in my service and in my education and in my life. You always get what you deserve. And by that I simply mean that what goes around comes around. And so if you want people to love you, then you must love others. If you want to have if you want to have good things in life, you have to be generous to others. So sometimes people look outside of themselves and blame bosses or supervisors or spouses or neighbors or relatives, and yet it always boils down to you. And I've certainly learned that in my life. I've been very, very richly blessed, not only physically, as I mentioned, but emotionally and even financially. And it comes down to getting back what you give out. So that would be my affirmation.
Okay.
And the other one is you always must give first in order to receive. So how does that sound? Does that sound doable?
Well, that works. So how about we say then, I am giving to others exactly what I want to receive in my life.
Ah, there you go. Yes, that's a positive way of saying it. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so the affirmation, I am giving to others exactly what I want to receive in my life. Well, would you even turn that around as I am receiving? Well, yeah, I was going to say I am receiving what I'm giving to others, but that could be a little hairy. We'd like it this way for this.
Yes, okay.
The other angle. So, okay, very good. Well, I thank you very much for your time. Again, is there anything else that you'd like to add for us?
Well, I think you've covered the most of my life pretty effectively within the time, and so I thank you very much for good questions and for the time to share some of my life story.
Very good.
It's been
thank you.
Very wonderful experience.
Thank you very much, Pastor Tom, for being a part of Purpose Talk Radio and sharing your experience both as a veteran, a minister, and as a corporate leader in the community. And I wish you luck in your future ventures, and hopefully you can get yourself back to retirement and enjoying that piece of your life, too. Not that we don't like you where you are, but, you know, retirement is important also for all of us to have time to travel or enjoy life and just merit whatever we've been able to collect over the years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
thank you.
I'm working on two books, and so someday hopefully we'll be sharing them too.
Okay. Well, good. That's your next step of life, huh? The writing. All right, great. Look forward to hearing more about those in the future.
All right. Thank you very much, dear one.
Thank you. I'll put you back on hold here if you'd like to listen to the rest of the show. Otherwise, we will be wrapping this up shortly and heading on out. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, that was Reverend Tom Sherbrooke out here in Milwaukee, and both a veteran and a non-denominational minister. He shared with us a little bit about what he thought of his military experience and how it helped him both to achieve the skills and the passion for life that he has gotten over the years and is then able to turn into his ministry, especially the leadership, listening well, being compassionate for other people. Those were the main things. First, he received some of that training as he went to the priesthood, or attempted to, although he did not take his vows, got the training that was needed to then make him a good military person and then work with counterintelligence. And because of that training, he was able to move quickly through his training in that as well, and then turned around and turned that back into his everyday life. So, you know, it is Veterans Day. We celebrate that. And I want to honor and thank all those who have served our country and countries all over the world. You know, military people are put in very high-risk, high-stress situations, and we never know how they process what they're put into, what they're literally thrown into in any moment. It takes quick reactions, quick thinking, sometimes contrary to what you might personally be feeling, you have to react a different way. And therefore, it is and does cause a lot of this trauma and the emotional stress that a lot of our military people come home with. If you can in any way help them listening, being a part of their lives, any of that, I encourage you to do so. Like I said, sometimes it just takes listening and allowing them to vent and express what happened and express particularly how they're feeling. Sometimes that's all they need. Sometimes they need a lot more. Sometimes it's more intense counseling. Sometimes it is group support. The Veterans Administration is, you know, working on that a little bit more because they are starting to recognize how post-traumatic syndrome affects people in their lives, in their daily lives, as well as into anything that they have done in the military. However, it takes money, it takes funds, it takes time, it takes manpower back here in the United States to be able to administer some of that. If you do need that kind of service, please do connect with your veterans organizations, your local churches, social development agencies, whatever it might take for you to get what you need. But don't, please, whatever, if you're a vet suffering with post-traumatic syndrome, don't just keep eating it because it will eventually eat you. That's been proven. One of the things Tom Sherbrooke said is that the statistics show that there are 22 veterans a day committing suicide. That number to me was shocking. And
unbelievable. But if it's the statistic, it is what it is. It can't be disputed. That means that something's wrong. That's higher than most suicides anywhere for any reason. And it's sad to hear. So please, folks, get what you need when you come back. And those of us who are here, continue to pray for and support our veterans in any way we can. Yeah, it does choke me up a bit, so I apologize for that. But you know, my brother is a veteran. He was a cook in the Army. And I invited him to call in and be a part of this today, too, but he is working another job, so he can't do that right now. I know some other people who have been veterans and are struggling to find work and to find a different career because, you know, all they know is the rigidity of the Army. And they come back and it's, you know, life. There are rules to listen to. There are bosses to contend with. There is listening of other sorts. But they don't know how to make that transition from one to the other. So again, I thank you, all of our veterans in every branch of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Seabees. I may be missing some, whether you are in the United States or whether you are elsewhere. I thank you for supporting your country and doing what you feel is necessary in the time. I know some people go in to get education training, and some go in to get discipline, and some go in because they don't see any other alternative to their life and they need to have something for a career. Others go because they want to support a particular action that's going on. Whatever it is, the decision, you are serving your purpose if you feel it's destined. And that's what this entire show is about. So for anyone who is serving their purpose, who would like to share with others how that came to be and what you may have done in your life, I invite you to be a guest on this show. You can do so by sending an email to me, jumping on our website at purposetalkradio.com, or by sending an email, Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at purposetalkradio.com, P-U-R-P-O-S-E-T-A-L-K-R-A-D-I-O.com. You can catch me on the Facebook page, Purpose Talk Radio, or Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, sending a message through that as well, or any of my other websites or Facebook pages, Cindy Freeman Writer, social media counselor or social media consultant, editor, proofreader, any of those pages, you can find me all over, lots of different places and in a lot of different groups on Facebook. So please feel free to send me a message there if you like to share what you have to offer to the world or if you know someone else. On the other hand, if you have a product or service that you would like to share with our wonderful listening audience. We do have a faithful following of listeners each week and people who do want to live their purpose and want to find out the key. They always want the key to being able to live their purpose. You can do so. We do have a couple of marketing programs available for you as well. And again, that is available on our website at purposetalkradio.com. I think that pretty much wraps up our show for this week. I am not entirely sure who we have next week. We've got, we're waiting on one response to find out if I'm scheduling that person or someone else. So just check out our Facebook pages and find out who we have up the road. In the meantime, I think that's pretty much all we have for you. Again, this closing song, our theme song, is called I Am Who I Am. It is by the group True Trinity, Jillian Clark, Rachel Martinez, and myself. And as you all get to be who you are each and every day living your purpose, I wish you all soul blessings. Have a great week.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.